Your competition is asleep. It's you against the world, and if you want to win, we need to get a few things straight. Your business is a mental war. Your success is a mental war. And making money is a game. And the game of money starts in your mind. This podcast exists to help you weaponize your brain through advanced marketing, mindset, and money concepts. To have what others don't, you need to know what others won't. Your future fortune awaits. Welcome to the War Plan Podcast. Hey, my friend, welcome back to the War Plan Podcast. How the heck are you? I hope all of your dreams have come true, but if you're still working on them, keep your head up. That's okay. It takes time. Rome wasn't built in a day, and your dreams are like your miniature version of Rome, and you got to stack the bricks and learn the lessons and all the things. I have a special treat for you because I'm joined by my friend Ryan Johnson. And when you interview people, you call everyone your friend. You're like, oh, my friend Bill and Sarah. And no, Ryan, I've known him for years. He's a young guy, young family guy. He's built a multi-million dollar business from the ground up. He's been to my house in Michigan. He's also our poster child coach inside of our other thing that we do. And it's insane. He's making money. He's changing lives. He still dates his wife, plays with his kids. I think that's amazing. A lot of respect for you, Ryan. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for the invite, Josh. And I don't know if you saw, I actually tagged you on Instagram and I posted about coming on this show today and like what it means to me. I think you know this, and we'll probably get into a little bit with my story, but I mean, I was listening to the Quick Talk podcast before I moved to Phoenix.
That goes way back.
You know, it was a part-time thing in college, and I had started cleaning windows like 6 months. I was like 6 months in my small hometown before I figured out I needed to move here. And so it's just full circle to be able to, you know, I was listening to your podcast, what is that, 7 years ago now? And to be on it now, it's an honor.
Yeah, man. I actually did see you post that right before I hopped on here to talk to you. And it is cool, you know, and I remember if you want to maybe go with your origin story, you actually had a business, like you said, part-time in a certain market. You came to our house for an event that we did years ago, I think 2017 or something like that. Maybe 2018. And then you switched locations because of something I said or something about the total addressable market and the TAM in your market being too small. And I think that's really interesting because you ended up uprooting your family, starting over, but then built a seven-figure business really, really fast with this newfound motivation. Can you tell us about what happened?
Yeah. So just a little background. So I started cleaning windows in college. I planned to go to college to become a dentist and hated college. Chemistry class it just drove me nuts. Like, I just felt like I was learning useless information. Obviously it's not useless, but to me it felt useless. And I remember my professor just being, I just had a hard time respecting him for whatever reason. And it just, I don't know, just hated it. So I had started cleaning windows and I was probably making like, I don't know, maybe $1,000 a week cleaning windows, or probably even less than that. But at the time that felt like a ton of money. Yeah. I actually moved before the Automate, Grow, Sell experience. So what it was you ran a event, an online event or webinar. It was called
Challenge. Close the Gap Workshop.
You just did some quick math as far as like how you could figure out how big your business could get in your area. It was something along the lines of how many people in your area were above a certain income, and then 10% of that is what would be like realistic to capture market share of or whatever. And I'm from a small hometown. It's like 2,500 people. The whole valley is about 20,000 people. So probably could have grown a $1 million business there. You know, there's $1 million HVAC companies and stuff there. But I just knew pretty quickly that it wasn't going to happen quick, and it was going to be hard. Just like pretty low income, like a lot of middle class people. So this was, I think we watched that it was like mid-May of 2019. Had that challenge, which I could be wrong on this. It's been a while. I'm pretty sure that was like a Tuesday. That Friday, my wife and I went to look at houses to rent here in the Phoenix Metro. And then we moved the following Monday.
Wow.
So it was like, but as soon as you taught these things, my wife came home that night. She had like a job at a supplement company that she didn't enjoy. She was making like minimum wage. And as soon as she got home, I was like, babe, we have to move. Like, we have to, like, it's not a choice, because I just felt this like burning inside my heart that was the right thing to do. And so we did. So that was May of 2019. We didn't know it at the time, but my wife was just barely pregnant when we moved. So the plan was for her to like get a job and, you know, she could work a little bit while I grew this business. And then she applied for a few jobs, didn't hire her. So she decided to work with me. And then a couple months later, she was too pregnant to help. So that was my like back against the wall moment is, you know, we're going through summer in Arizona, which is our slowest season. And my wife's pregnant, can't really help me put out flyers or whatever anymore. Although she did throughout the summer, but end of summer, she was too pregnant to help. And so it was like, I got to figure this out. So I did. I think we had our first $10,000 month. I believe it was the month my daughter was born, which was January of 2020, like right before the world shut down. Mm-hmm. And then 2020 is our first full year. By our third full year, which was 2022, we had done $1 million. We did like 1.2 million in 2022. So
wow.
It was really just that back against the wall thing that just made, like, I didn't have any other choice. So I just had to make it happen. So,
well, it was really easy though, right? Like there's no challenges. You didn't have to work that hard. You just did 4-hour work week. Is that how you built $1 million business so fast? Is just a 4-hour work week?
I remember back then we would, my wife and I, we followed like Dave Ramsey, which I think Dave Ramsey teaches some cool stuff, and some of his stuff is obviously not the best for business owners, but we did the little thing where we would put money in envelopes to pay for our bills.
Yep. And we did that.
When we moved, I didn't understand that our seasonality was going to be the opposite of most of the country, where our summers were going to be really tough because we get Arizona monsoons, we get really bad wind and dust storms, and it's pretty bizarre. You can like see miles of dust coming at you in the distance in the desert. So our summers are really slow. And I remember towards the end of the summer, I think that August we had like a $2,500 month, and we had had a $5,000 month prior in June, I think. And I remember we put the money in these envelopes. We were trying to stay about 6 weeks ahead on our bills. And I remember thinking like we had the money in there. And I remember sitting down and thinking like, we're going to make it. Like we have 6 weeks worth of bills. We're going to get through summer and we're going to make it. Cause before then I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if I'm gonna have to move back into my parents' house, like go get a job somewhere. But
the math wasn't mathing.
Yeah. I don't know how we made it. Cause we moved with like no money hardly. And we had more personal bills that month of August than we brought in revenue. But somehow we made it work.
I love freaking stories like this because, I mean, I don't know where I want to start, but I love stories like this because it's real. It's gritty. It's fun to tell in hindsight, but when you're living it, not that fun. I know because I had a story like this. I was a pizza guy in the trailer park. I get it. Walk me through like how you succeeded. Okay. Cause there's something about that I've noticed with you specifically, just to encourage other maniacs out there. There's something about like the level of action you take that's disproportionate compared to most people. I don't know if you're just crazy, if you just like to take more risk or something, but like you just do stuff. Even when you started coaching and like you hadn't really coached for money and started like mentoring and training, and you did it, you're consistent, you pushed it, you're killing it with that. And it happens so fast. And so this is a pattern with you. Is it possible to reverse engineer what about you makes this possible so that people can learn from it? What do you think?
I don't know. And I don't want to sit up here and tell you I'm, you know, the greatest ever or whatever. I think one thing I've been blessed with like since birth is the ability to like go after my dreams. I just kind of need to know what I need to do. Like if I have a game plan and I know like this is the next step I need to take, I'll go all in. So like early on for us, it was your flyer method, which I now teach to all of my group, handwritten price on the same houses over and over, 10,000 homes a month. Like I knew the game plan. So then I adopted this mindset that I'm out putting out flyers or I'm cleaning windows. And that's all I do with my time. You know, obviously I was coming home at 5 or 6 PM and spending some time with my wife. But during working hours, like that's literally all I did.
What's awesome about that is you don't overcomplicate something that's clear and simple that works. I think a lot of people do that. I mean, you're working with a lot of small business owners now too, and you can give them like two little simple things and they'll turn it into 18 complicated things. It's like, but did you do the two simple things? Well, yeah, but I was thinking about the subsection 3 point inverse flux capacitor reverse ball bearing on a second Tuesday of a full blood moon. What about that? And there's like in their head or something instead of doing the ugly basic stuff. Is that what you've seen as well?
Yeah. I mean, even with that method, I'll give people like a whole training on it. And then they come back to me and they're like, okay, I'm going to do it, but I need to wait till my logo's perfect or like till the card is perfect. And I'm like, no, just launch version one now.
No one cares about your logo except your mom and probably you. And that's it. Right.
Yeah. And obviously over time, your logo is going to be important. And like building a good brand is super important, but just getting started, like it really doesn't matter.
So I
would agree. Just like, you just need to start with version one, get that out. And then, you know, by the time it's time to order the next ones, then we have version two ready and it's better and it looks better and it'll probably convert better. You get a lot more out of doing just
the other thing with like boots on the ground marketing, like the good old fashioned flyer method. You know, people get distracted with like AI this and fancy tool software automation this. And it's like, the reality is if you have like, if you have a desire to build a $1 million business fast, that's all you need is one simple lever like that. An analog old school boots on the ground method. You can do it with that. People just don't for some reason, but it requires great volume. Like people pass out 500 flyers and think they did something. It's like, no, 50,000, like the orders of magnitude more than you think is required. And you must have just been stacking the volume of it, right? And then to hit that much, especially after COVID, there's a compound effect of that much volume of consistent marketing. It starts to pop. Is that what happened with you guys?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were doing 10,000 a month, my wife helping early. And then, you know, over time it turned into me and then my first tech helping, tons of volume. And then, yeah, people hold on to them. Eventually they start calling. So that's when it starts to work. I think a lot of people get discouraged when, you know, like you said, they put out their first 500 and maybe they didn't get a call. That's why it's like, no, we got to put out 10,000 a month. We got to put them on the same houses over and over. And that's when it's going to work. Like, it can't not work.
Yeah, exactly.
Myron
Golden says that all work works. There's two types of work, the work that you do on it and the work that it does on you. And if you didn't get a goosebump, go rewind this and listen to it again because you didn't get what I just said. Because you become a different person by doing great volumes of hard things. You know, our family slogan is do hard things. I have a huge poster on the wall over here. It changes you. I mean, do you think that's true? And don't just agree with me on the podcast, but like, are you leveled up right now because of the hard things and choices and grind that you did? Can you see that?
For sure. I think for me, it goes back a long ways. Like I played high school basketball. I coach high school basketball now. And I don't come from like an athletic family at all. But I was able to turn into one of the best high school basketball players in our division in the whole state because I just put in a ton of work. So that's one thing I feel like I've been blessed with. I don't know how to like teach this or train it to someone, but like once I get my mindset on something, I'm able to work hard and go get that thing. And then over time, as I've done that over and over, it becomes easier. And I think that's why, you know, our coaching business grew as fast as it did is because I had, you know, some guidance to what I needed to do and then just like worked hard to make it happen. So,
yeah, I mean, it sounds simple, but there's something profound there. Like, I wish I could interview your parents at the same time as I'm interviewing you right now, because there's something they did that set you up. And probably part of what they did was not installing a bunch of false beliefs and fear inside you. Because a lot of people, you'll start noticing it now, it's just like how hesitant they are to do very simple things. And it's because of weird beliefs, childhood programming, FOPO, as we call it, you know, fear, overwhelm, procrastination, overthinking. I'm sure that you're a regular person that has FOPO too sometimes, but the degree at which some people have it is completely paralyzing. It's more about like unlearning things to move forward than it is about learning new things in a case like that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. My parents, I think, are a big part of it. My dad is 62, I think, and he has worked hard manual labor his whole life. Like up at 4:30 in the morning at work, hard manual labor till he comes home. So I think for me, the hard working aspect comes from him. And the other thing I'm grateful for is like when I, you know, within a week decided we were going to move and bring this business here and start over, my parents didn't have anything negative to say. Maybe they had negative thoughts, I don't know, but because they believed in me, they're like, okay, cool. Like that sounds good. Whereas like, for example, my in-laws, it's a completely different thing. It's like, are you sure you want to do that? Like everything could go wrong. Or like multiple people that I talk to in the community, like, oh, that's probably not going to work. Do people actually pay you to clean windows? But that's one thing I'm super grateful for. And now that you bring it up, it's just that my parents were like, cool, sounds good. Like, how can we help you move? Like, it wasn't necessarily like money from them or anything like that, but it was confidence from them that Sure, you're a grown
it's
adult.
Huge. It's huge, especially when you're not 100% confident. Like you are, but then like an hour later, you're like, "Am I an idiot? Am I doing? Am I ruining my life?" No, I got this 100%. And you like in this uncertainty, we need to borrow other people's certainty. So having parents or even people like in your mastermind, or that's why having a business coach can be valuable. It's like borrowing certainty, so you can move forward faster. Okay, well, tell me a little bit about this coaching thing. What's it been like for you, and what have you learned so far from it? Working with other people, the good, bad, the ugly, you know, promoting yourself out there on the internet, and you promote pretty aggressively, really. I mean, you're just out there doing it. What are some of the big lessons you've learned so far on that journey? Because you got another 7-figure business with that now, which is insane. So unpack that a little bit.
Yep. So it's happened a little quicker than I anticipated, or, you know, didn't really know it was possible. I think we launched June of last year. So it's a little over a year. I've got a little over 60 people in the group now, did a little over 80K last month. So on pace to be, you know, a seven figure business and continue to grow up month after month. What I've learned from it, So one, like a lot of my time is spent now coaching others. I think I've heard you say this before, and I've found it to be true. I think I've learned as much about business in the last year coaching other people as I have growing my own business. The way that people think and the way to deal with like different personalities. And you brought up risk tolerance earlier. I feel like I've always been blessed with like having a very high risk tolerance, because I just don't care. Like, you know, if everything goes wrong, then so be it. But learning to like teach people who have a low risk tolerance has been rewarding to me, like learning how to kind of get into their brains and what they're thinking and know how to best help them based on where they're at and what they're willing to do. I feel like it's just helped me to be able to learn how to communicate better. And then, like, you're right, posting a lot. We're spending like 10 grand a month on ads right now. So there's a ton of like, I mean, there's negative comments every single day. You know, like
all the internet scammer, trolls out there.
Poor seller, people calling me fat, which I'm not fat. So just like weird stuff like that.
If they're calling you fat, I'm in trouble when I start running more ads, bro. It's not going to be.
That's like, it's like common. It's like once a week I get a fat comment.
The internet's not real. It's like, I don't know. It feels like a video game kind of. I struggle with it. You know, it's always been hard for me because I actually do care what people think, and it holds you back. And like the less you do, the way that I'm not trying to not care is by viewing it as a video game full of NPCs. And like every troll, you get like a point or a level up or something on my character or something. That's kind of wild. A minute ago, you said you've learned a lot by teaching other people. I heard, and I think it's an Albert Einstein quote, but he said, if you can't explain your ideas to a 6-year-old, then you don't understand them. And I think it's true that like one of the best ways to learn is to teach, because when you re-articulate things that you know them more after you re-articulate them. It kind of forces you to like have mastery over something that you thought you had mastery over. And in my experience as well, I don't know if this has happened to you, it also puts this positive pressure on you to like run your own core business tighter. And not that any business is perfect, because none of them are, but it feels weird to talk about something that you haven't fully dialed here. And so it puts, I don't know, there's like this beautiful tension, and you're making money, you're helping people, but it's still affecting your core service business, probably in a good way, I would assume. What do you think?
Yeah. So over the last few years, our growth has been slower in my window cleaning business. We went from like 1.2 million to 1.35 to 1.5 over the course of like 2022 to 23 to 24. And I feel like having the coaching business has like motivated me to take it to the next level and fix things. Like, for example, I started teaching everybody the flyer method that I learned from you initially. And then people started doing 20K a month from this lever alone. So I'm like, why are we not doing this in my business anymore? So I've like hired a flyer team. One of the big things I figured out, I've talked to you a little bit about this over the last like year, is service agreements and like starting to sell like a membership program as a window cleaning company. And that's been like the biggest game changer. We, this past April was 1 year since we launched our membership program. And we started April 1st with 61,000 on the schedule on April 1st for April. And like 50 of that 60 was just service plans. So it's just quarterly biannual cleanings that were just repeating.
Wow.
So
are they paying you monthly for this service agreement? Is that how it works?
We could do that. We initially did that, but it felt like it added a little bit of friction in the buying process because we had to like create a certain invoice and then send it over to them and then they pay it. So we're just mostly billing at service. There's kind of a couple ways to do that, and there are people doing it that way. But I feel like having the coaching business like really motivated me to like, okay, how do we get now to 2 million and continue to grow? And as I continue to grow this, it helps the coaching business and vice versa. So
yeah. Yeah. So especially, so you have over $500,000 in like reoccurring pre-scheduled work.
It's not 50 every month. It's at about 340 right now. 340K is our annual recurring revenue.
Yeah. That's pretty huge though. Cause if you do want to exit your business, you know, you and I both know that matters, and that gives you an argument for a much higher valuation to have a little bit more stability baked in. Plus that's the way of the world. Like, believe it or not, I'm not just saying this, but when I sold my cleaning company in 2015, one of the last big projects that I never fully finished because we sold was selling subscription window cleaning residentially. I thought it was like obviously the way of the future. And like it sort of was. I think it would have been a little early then, but you know, we live in a Netflix, Amazon Prime, you know, Spotify subscription world, or having memberships. And now today I teach people like the importance of creating what I call a captive customer. And that's what you're doing. I think that's huge, because when someone's a diamond member or whatever, or they get their punch card punched as part of your subscription program, whatever, it doesn't matter how you lay it out, in their mind, they've solved that window cleaning problem permanently. They're like, oh, that's solved now. Versus, I got a flyer, it's cleaned once, bye. It's like, no, I'm part of this thing and that problem's solved. So you create a captive customer, which is enormously valuable to your business. And so that, is that one of the core secrets you're teaching inside of your coaching now, is how people can do that?
For sure. It's like, it's definitely a thing that people are interested in. Something I've been thinking about for 5 years, but just never implemented. Josh, have you heard of Green Mango Pest Control? Have you heard of that company?
I have heard of that. I don't know much of why have I heard. It kind of freaks me out that you said that. I know it. I don't know why I know it. So
it's the largest pest control company in Phoenix. And they have a sister company that's a carpet cleaning company called Coconut Cleaning, which is where I learned from the owner there. I learned a lot of our like membership program we have based on what they're doing. Anyways, Green Mango, they 24 million a year in revenue. They just sold for $100 million. So the owner, Cameron Bodden, had a $100 million paycheck to exit. And the reason is they had 20,000 people on a service agreement.
Wow.
Yeah, doing 24 million a year in revenue. So I had a major, major buyout because of the membership program. And it's been normal in the pest control industry for years now. It just hasn't been normal in exterior cleaning or in window cleaning. So that's one thing that I'm working on, is like making that normal. It just makes everything so much easier.
Yeah, man. Well, let's go more advanced for a second, because if you're at 1.5 right now, if we can get your business, and you're in a market big enough to potentially support, maybe with a satellite location or something, what, 3 to 5 million window cleaning? Is that what you think?
Probably even more, honestly. I mean, we're
so if we can get to 5 though, and you have like at least a million in EBITDA or profit, mm-hmm. What's crazy is like your business is worth nothing when you started it. Then you did a bunch of stuff, you hit 1.2, probably reinvested a lot in equipment and scale and growth and wraps and all that. So it wasn't worth a ton, but it had a foundation. But if you make, like, once your business has a foundation like that, you can make 3 or 4 serious moves and like 10x the value of the company really fast. And private equity are buying service businesses like freaking hotcakes. It's like out of control. And that story you told me doesn't surprise me for the 100 million, because I have countless stories like that. There's actually a guy on the East Coast that's a friend of one of my friends that sold for almost 200 million in the pest control business. Or no, he was in the lawn fertilization business. But it's the same business model. So it's a low ticket subscription thing.
Yeah.
Did tons of revenue, and they're paying 20 or 30x multiples if your EBITDA gets big enough. I think that's insane, right? Because how old are you, Ryan? You're like 17, right?
I'm 27. So
27.
Off by 10 years.
27. It's amazing to think. Another friend of mine, Bennett Grove, he's been here at the studio, but he had a huge exit from his business I won't say no much. I'm sworn to secrecy, but he was telling me like what it felt like when like a wire transfer hit his account. And it's like, it breaks your brain, right? It's like you do all these flyers and all this hustle and all this stuff above and you're coaching your butt. But if you get it to a certain level of profit, especially if you have service agreements, you don't have to work ever again. And you could be like 28 and a half or 30 or something. That's, do you think about that?
Yeah. I don't really know what the end goal is. I would say the end goal may have changed over this last year with the coaching business blowing up the way it has and just the leverage in the information business. I think about it. I don't know what my goal is or, you know, where it's going over the next 5 to 10 years, but it continues to grow. And as it grows, it helps my coaching business. And I think an exit at some point is probably going to make sense.
Yeah, I see such a bright future for what you're doing. And one of my other favorite parts is you're a family guy. So tell me about your family a little bit. Do you guys have some cool family systems? How do you hold it all together? You have to play with your kids, but you're busy and you're working. What's that look like for the Johnson family?
Yeah. Yep. So we've got our 5-year-old daughter. Her name's Layla. She just started kindergarten. So she's the one that was born right before COVID hit. We have a 3-year-old son named Bentley. And then we have May, June, July, August, 15-month-old. Her name is Scarlett. So one of the things that I've done, so one is my wife and I have weekly date night, like our life depends on it. We actually just went to a nice steakhouse and we were actually talking about this last night because we spent like $300 on dinner last night.
Yeah.
And I remember when we would go out to get snow cones and that was like a big treat for us back in the day. Like we did good today and we made some revenue so we can go get snow cones. And then yesterday we had a $300 dinner. Like it was nothing, but that's one thing we do is weekly date night. Like our life depends on it. It happens. I mean, if there's 52 weeks in a year, it's 51 weeks. We're probably doing a date night. We might miss one a year. So that's the first one. I'll actually schedule time on my calendar to spend time with my kids. I'm not perfect at it. And it sounds weird to even say that, like oh, I'm scheduling in time with my kids. But for me, like just the intentional time spent with them is really important. And I've noticed that like, they don't even want to spend a ton of time with me, but they do want to spend like focused, phone away,
yes,
like time with me, you know, playing. And like for my son, maybe it's like, we're just going and playing with cars or whatever he likes to do. But I've noticed just those 30 minutes to an hour just spent dedicated time with them makes a big difference.
Bro, you know, I'm obsessed with this topic, right?
Yep.
Do you ever notice like the whole attitude, demeanor, energy, continence of your children changes just by doing that focused 30 minute thing? It's like, it's almost like it fills up their gas tank and they calm down and they're more polite and they're like, they just shift.
For sure.
It's crazy. The role of a father doing that. And again, it's not like you said perfectly. It's not about being proximity wise close to your kids for copious amounts of time. It's about like high concentrated, focused, non-distracted, get into their world time. Like I'll sit down with Judah, she's our 7-year-old, and we'll play Minecraft and just build stuff for an hour. And it's amazing, right? But like it's her and us and talking about this and the weird thing we're building, the cave we're digging in, or Legos, or go throw rocks in the river. It's crazy what it does. To me, it's like the biggest ROI thing you could ever do as a dad is what you just described.
Yeah, especially our son, Bentley, he's 3. He's been definitely our most difficult child.
Yeah.
Like just constantly like hitting and scratching and like, but he does those things when he needs attention. So like if we're able to just go play with him, like he just acts better, he's happier. And I get super frustrated with him when he's always like hitting me and stuff. But then when I remember like, I just need to go spend some time with him. Like he just needs some time with dad or he just needs some time with mom. Like it makes the biggest difference. So I'm not perfect at it. Still get frustrated with him. Still get mad at him.
Yeah, me neither. When my oldest is 18 now, and when he was 3 is when I started doing, you know, Maverick Monday,
mm-hmm.
all those weekly days. I think it was the best family system ever. I agree on date night too. Are you guys doing any like family identity system stuff? You know, like having a family logo or core values as Johnsons or
We haven't. We probably
manifesto.
should.
That's the next level. It's like create the Johnson Manifesto. Have you seen the Latimer Manifesto?
I've seen it. Yeah, it's
It's
been
the
a while.
Latimer birthright is what we call it, but it's like
Yep.
I'm a child of God. I am here for greatness. I will do hard things. I will read God's word. I will like it's got all
Yeah.
these epic proclamations, and you get your kids kind of like I don't know. I think the whole thing's awesome, and really the purpose of business is to serve our families and serve the people we're called to serve, and that's the purpose of profit. That's the purpose of abundance, in my opinion. And by the way, my opinion's right. Just saying. Tell me a little bit. I want to shift a little bit and talk about, based on your coaching experience so far the last year, I want to do like a lightning round of what are people doing wrong? How can they get unstuck? What are some moves they can make, thoughts they can think, systems they can build, whatever, to just move the needle? And I'm going to talk for 20 seconds more so you can prep your brain on this question that I'm blindsiding you with. But what do you say to just good-hearted people fighting the good fight? It ain't working. They're struggling. Are they mismanaging their time? Is it they don't understand their numbers? What do they do? How do they increase their profit? What do they do? Should they quit? Should they get a real job? That's what some of these people are thinking. Give us some rapid fire, off the cuff advice for this person.
I'd say the biggest things that I've seen after coaching, 100 plus people. You always talk about how you've coached thousands of people. I'm past 100 now, so I can start saying that. But
That's
the
awesome.
biggest things I think that I've noticed is just like one, low volume. So people think that they're marketing hard, but they're not. Nobody knows them, and that's the problem, is they're just not getting in enough people's faces. A lot of them worry about like, oh, if I go put out that many flyers, people are going to call me and be mad that I littered on their door or whatever. So just like fear of things like that and doing too low volume. And then two, this is something you talk about a lot, but I see it over and over again, is like the lack of being able to have stamina in marketing.
Oh yeah.
Like,
They quit the band before they get the record deal. It's like the marketing maybe was about to start working soon, but they start and stop and they're like epileptic in the way that they do it and they can't stick with it, right?
yeah. So I tell people this all the time, like before you get to 20K, don't run Facebook ads. And everybody wants to, that's like what they want to do. They're like making $5,000. They're like, oh, I should start running Facebook ads now. What people don't realize is most often, if they're doing it right, they're not going to get a return quickly on Facebook ads. So the right way to do it is to run a foot and door offer that's hard to say no to, and you have a good upsell process in place, and you have a good service agreement in place, and you're texting them every month for the next 10 years, getting them back on schedule. And that's where the value is. Like, I ran a report the other day in my CRM, sales by marketing source over the last 5 years since 2020. We've done over $2 million directly from Facebook, but our monthly ROI from Facebook isn't good. It's like maybe we'll spend 2K and we'll get 4K out. And by the time I mean, we'll spend more than that, but just as an example, by the time we go service it, we didn't make any money. But I think that's the biggest problem that most people do, is they're not willing to like think long term. Because, which makes sense. Like, they don't, that's why I don't think that they should do it until they're, 20K a month or so, because they have a little bit of money to play with. But they're so focused on, like, I spent 2,000, I booked four, I went and serviced it, actually lost money this month. But they're not thinking about, okay, this customer, we're going to sell them Christmas lights every year. They're going to be on a quarterly window cleaning. This customer's going to pay us $10,000 over the next 5 years. And that's where the money is.
I feel like slow clapping right now. I mean, amateurs focus on the front end, professionals focus on the back end.
Backhand. Yep.
So that's the classic trope. Have you ever heard that like certain, is it Japanese or Chinese businessmen have 500-year business plans? Did you know that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
I
Yep.
like Google it. It's a real thing. I think it's kind of crazy to have a 500-year business plan, but at the same time, it's kind of genius too. Like if you're going to have a bias, don't bias towards today, bias towards the future, the legacy, you know?
It's just so hard to do when you're like,
It is. And actually
have no money
it's
and
unreasonable to ask someone to do it too early. Like if they're in survival crisis mode, we
yeah.
just have to like put the fire out and like get started and build a foundation. So, you know, like the orphan, you heard me talk about orphan sons and kings.
I don't think so, no.
Well, it's like it's actually a biblical reference, but these business owners that are doing, you know, they're just scraping by and getting going. They have an orphan mentality. And that's not condescending. I mean, I still have parts of myself that are an orphan right now, right? That's why I struggle with my weight. There's like false beliefs. There's things, right, that aren't figured out yet. But when it comes to money, a lot of people have an orphan mentality. And so orphans can't think long term. They only think in terms of survival, and they think essentially 24 hours at a time. You know, it's like, how do I solve the problem right now? My tummy grumbling right now, or how do I, survive? You know, how do I not die or get eaten by the saber-toothed tiger? Because that's what it feels like. Someone's trying to eat you every day. Remember when you first started your business? Yep. It's like you feel like something's running after you and you have to outrun it. And that's kind of normal. But then what happens is people graduate into a certain measure of security and comfort. I call that the son-daughter phase. You know, think of the Israelites. Like when they were slaves in Egypt, that the slave part, that's the orphan. But then they got delivered by Moses and they lived in the wilderness for 40 years. And that's the son-daughter phase, because they were actually protected in the wilderness. God totally protected them, killed the bad guys, gave them clothes, gave them food every day, like rained down food from heaven. You know, we're talking about with like manna and stuff. It's totally insane. And they'd still complain. They'd wander out there complaining. They didn't have to hunt. They didn't have to get their own food. They didn't have to make their own clothes. Nothing was going to eat them. They were just chilling. And that's what businesses do when they get kind of in like it's good enough rhythm for a long time. And like what you step into, and what I'm always trying to encourage people to step into, is the king queen mindset, which is when you go to the promised land. The thing about the promised land, though, is it requires you to fight. It requires you to slay. There's giants in the promised land. And people think like, oh, God has destined me for a great life. It's like, I agree. And you're going to have to knock down some Goliaths to take dominion over it, or it's not going to happen. And I got way off track there and worked up, but I'm passionate about that. And I think you're right. They need to think long-term. They need to think like a king, right? Stop acting like an orphan all the time. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's why it's important that if the goal is to build a big business, to get out of that like 500K a year spot as soon as possible, because you get there and it's like, you can feed your family now, but you're probably only bringing home 50K on it. You know, people want to probably say that they're doing 20%, but they're probably doing more like 10% in net profit.
Yeah.
And it's a comfortable.
Cause they have all used trucks and they have to change one transmission per month, and there's the rest of your profit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But they get stuck right in that range and they stop growing. They're losing as many customers as they're getting new. And it just gets kind of comfortable. You kind of stop doing your boots on ground stuff that got you to where you're getting where you are. So that's why I just tell that to people all the time. They'll come in and maybe they're doing like 250 to 500K, and I'll let them know like, you're in the hardest part of business, in my opinion. Because early, like, it's hard, but it's like exciting still. It's like I go out and I do this thing, and then the phone rings and it like gives you this dopamine hit, and it's like exciting. Then you get into that range and it's like, oh, this sucks. You know,
that's, I'm very true, man.
Putting out flyers. And
Mike Dahlke calls it cash flow purgatory. And that, like, well, I think with inflation, it's like the $300,000 to $600,000 range, but that's semantics. I'm just saying, I agree 100% with the range you said. Mike calls it cash flow purgatory because nothing's really fully optimized. Like, you're not maxing out capacity. You don't have, like, maybe you have a shop that you're paying $2,000 or $3,000 a month for, but you're not like, you could do 4 million from that same lease payment of that square footage of a shop, but you're doing $500,000 paying the normal price for the lease. And so there's like inefficiencies, right? You don't have, you have the opposite of whatever the economy is, the scale, whatever the opposite of that is. So it's like, there's lots of revenue happening, but there's no money and you don't understand why. And it's so discouraging that people just settle for less. They're like, all right, I guess I won't get a bass boat. I'm just going to be grateful for what I have. And they stop pushing, bro. They stop. Do you have any older, not older people, like they're old, but older people in your program, like maybe 40, 50 year olds, 60 year olds that have had a family business for a long time and they're in that range? Have you ran across people like that?
Yeah, a ton of them. It's like, I would say it's probably the most common range where people are looking for help. Cause early it's like, they're figuring it out, you know, they're doing their thing, but you get in that range and it's like, whatever I've been doing is not working.
Yeah.
So like, I need to figure out what's next. So I'd say it's probably the most common.
It reminds me of another thing I'd like your opinion on. So sometimes I'll teach this as, I call it units of pain, but like, I think you and I can both agree that like going from $0 to a $500,000 is really hard. It's like, takes tons of effort. It's like pushing a rock up a hill, right? assuming you don't have a trust fund, you don't have an unlimited black Amex and mommy and daddy's money. But if you're just starting from scratch, it's hard, right? Do you agree with that?
For sure.
So let's label achieving 500K and all of the effort that got us there. We'll label that as like 82 units of pain. Like it costs 82 units of pain to get this result. And I think what happens subconsciously is people falsely assume, well, and they're doing this subconsciously, like, oh, so to get to 500,000 was 82 units of pain. That means to get to 1,000,000 will be 164 units of pain. I'll die at 90 units of pain. I'm just going to stay here. And that's kind of what's happening. But what they don't understand, and maybe you can elaborate on this, but it flips. It's easier to run a $1.5 million business than it is to run a $500,000. The units of pain go down and the personal profit goes up. It's like there's like this quit zone and then it flips, and it flips right around that cash flow purgatory range at $500,000-$600,000. It depends. And they never get there, but they're like 2 feet from gold. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of that. Everybody's seen that picture of, you know, the guy with the axe and he's like right by the gold and he quits. And yeah, that's what I think of when I see a 500K business. Because I think a lot of times at that stage, like, you'd be surprised. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised because you've done this with thousands of people. But what surprises me still is how often somebody's in that stage and they've like never sent a text to their customer list. They've never sent an email out. They've never done any phone calls. They're just like waiting for their customers to call them. And then they're doing the same things they've been doing to bring in 300K a year and new revenue. Mm-hmm. What they don't realize is
they're allergic to money or something. I don't know.
But I mean, it goes back to FRAP, right? Just increasing frequency. It's like, okay, how can we get a text blast structure in place? We're hitting these people up every single month. We're getting 5-10K a month back on the schedule just by doing that. How can we start to sell these service agreements so that we're getting another 5-10K a month stacked up on that? And that's how you easily go from 500K to 1,000,000. For us, it was, I knew I wanted to get out of that stage as soon as possible. So that first full year of 2020, we did 250. Next year, we did 700. And then the next year, we did 1.2. So for me, I feel like I didn't have to be in that cash flow purgatory spot for long, because I just knew that I needed to move fast to get to where I wanted to get.
Well, you did it the right way. I tell people to do it the way that you did it, but like one out of 200 people do what you did, to be honest. And I've heard it said, stay small or go big, don't go in the middle. And most of these people are actually living for decades in the middle, which is the hardest, worst part. It's actually awesome to have like a $100,000 business with like no staff and you're just an artisan and you make good money. You can make your own terms. Like, it's not really a business, but that's awesome compared to working a job, right? And then what you're doing is awesome. But that middle part, it's not that awesome. So like, you got to blow through that thing quick. Get it out. Yep. Don't let, it's like when you walk on hot coals, you just like hurry up and get through it. Get it to 1,000,000. Hurry up.
Yeah, I actually saw on my Facebook today, it was a year ago today. You probably remember this. We went and we stayed a month in Hawaii. This was really before I started. Yes. Like,
Yeah.
This is like right before I really started pushing the coaching business. Had a few coaching clients, but didn't like run any ads yet or anything. And I did that. One, we just wanted to do that. But I did that mostly because I just wanted to see how my team did. It's like, I've got all the managers in place. Like, everything runs pretty well without me. How does it work if I leave for four weeks?
That's the truth. I did it.
Came back more money than when I left. Everything went well. Like, no major problems. Obviously, everything wasn't perfect. Like, there, I was still needed, you know, for some questions here and there. But that was my, like, sign that, okay, I've grown this, you know, seven-figure healthy business that pays me without me working. And now I can move on to something that I enjoy doing. Or you can, I don't know, you could just chill at this point too. That's not what I'm going to do. But I mean, at 1.5, you should be making 200-300K a year. Like, you're good when you get there. Anything else above that, it's like, great, we can make more money. But like, you're good.
Well, and even with your coaching business, because you've definitely invested a lot in ads, which, you know, isn't necessary for people that want to do $5,000-$10,000 a month in coaching or something, but you're going big because you're a maniac. You're thinking long term, because what's going to happen is there's going to come a time when you can just not do that if you choose. And it's just reoccurring revenue, and you're helping people, and it's just even more wealth for your family and your three kids. It's awesome. It's more trips to Hawaii. It's, I don't know, buy a bunch of Bitcoin or something, or some weird crypto, or don't. This isn't financial, but I'm just saying it gives you options, and you're so young, and this is just the beginning for you, Ryan. Like, it's insane when I think about what you'll be capable of and what the 35-year-old and the 45 and the 50-year-old version of Ryan Johnson looks like. I think you're awesome. Super, super bromance happening here. I'm proud of you. How can people, maybe there's window cleaners listening to this and they need to sign up with your coaching yesterday. How do they get in contact with you? How do people follow you? Where should they go?
I'd say the best thing is probably Instagram, although I'm a little shadow banned on Instagram right now. Posting too much or what, I don't know, but like when somebody goes to follow me, it like tells them like, you sure you want to follow this? Like, make sure it's safe.
Really?
Yeah. And it like locks me out of my Facebook. I had to pay somebody to like help me recover my Facebook account.
I'm gonna text Mark Zuckerberg real quick.
Right. But
just kidding.
Anyways, Facebook or Instagram's good. So Ryan Johnson is a very common name on Facebook. Might be hard to find, but we probably have mutual friends. It's a picture of me and all like the Reach window cleaning trucks, or on Instagram at Ryan the window cleaner. Is just great way to get a hold of me.
At Ryan the window cleaner, follow his content. He makes it look easy, everybody. And great inspirational story, brand new business, directly into COVID, pain and suffering, massive volume of boots on the ground, simple analog things, stacked results, hit a million in 3 years, built a $1 million coaching business in just over a year, having never done it for money. Insane. We're so proud to have you in our world, Ryan. And if you have a final word of encouragement or closing thought or quote, say it now and I'll let you go.
Awesome. I just want to say thanks for having me on, Josh. I don't think I have anything else, but it's been an honor to be here and talk with you and stuff. So excited.
Sounds good. Take care, everybody. Do you want to weaponize your brain and turn it into a money-making machine? Consider joining Warplan Coaching. You'll get thousands of dollars in exclusive courses and training, a private community, a chance to come to in-person meetups at Warplan Studios, and access to myself for Q&A every single month. Want to know the best part? It's free. Plus, we'll send you a private weekly newsletter full of money-making tips and cutting-edge ideas. Just go to warplan.com to sign up. Hey, I'm your biggest fan. I'm rooting for you. We'll see you next time.